Hello, hello, it's the nation's favorite sleepy voice post-production Dan, and depending on how good I am at that post-production, maybe the sound of my purring cat. Hello, new listeners. Thank you for joining us on the Audioface podcast feed. Audioface is usually a podcast where I talk with my friend Sean about the music news and music culture of the week. It oftentimes bleeds into politics, and so that is why starting this year we started doing these series of podcasts called Political Report, joined by the fellows from We Made It podcast, Bam and C's. Just a couple weeks ago, we were about to release an episode of Political Report that was going to cover the politics of the time, but then the George Floyd stuff kind of really took a head in the news. That changed everything. We released Political Report 4 and some content relating to that. So thank you for seeing that and watching that and listening to that. We appreciate it. But we still had this episode of Political Report lying around. And so before it got a little bit too stale in the news, we wanted to make sure we released it, but it is important that we don't let up on the issues that we talked about in Political Report 4, or what ended up being Political Report 4, on police brutality, on police violence. It was really important things that were said and really important things that have happened in the world since that podcast has been released, and hopefully will continue to happen in the future. Really, we want the momentum to continue going forward. And so we're releasing this podcast that happened before all that stuff happened, not to turn our back onto those things, but more to do what Political Report kind of does best, is take a long scale view on the issues in the world that are having long lasting ramifications beyond the day-to-day news cycle. So in that vein, if you want to have a more up-to-date conversation or hear about an up-to-date conversation about police brutality and black issues, I really encourage you to check out my friend Brooke Thomas's podcast, Controlling Our Narrative. They just did an episode on June 5th on protesting racism. And I think it is really excellent, kind of sum up on what's happened in the week and what happened needs to happen going forward as well. Bam is chomping at the bit to do another Political Report soon, so I'm sure we'll do that. And of course, if you stay subscribed, we'll have Audioface episodes where the music world, which is heavily influenced by black culture, will have some news trickling in about how the response to protest to that. And if you want escapism, which I understand, Audioface is a podcast about music, and there will be music to talk about that will keep going forward. But this is a super important topic, so we want to give it the weight that it deserves. So yeah, anyways, in this Political Report, we talk about Biden and his little gaffe with Charlamagne the God. We talk about Venezuela, and I'll include a special link about Venezuela in the description link, because there's so much ridiculous stuff with that story. I want to just include an actual little article for that. Anyways, I've talked way too long. Thank you very much for subscribing. We promise to keep delivering you really awesome, thought-provoking content. And here is Political Report now 5.
Hello, humans. Welcome to the Ghanaian Pallbearers Club. This is another podcast that we love to do here. Political Report 5 coming at you with the We Made It podcast boys, Bam and Caesar. Sean is here. Sean is here against every possible attempt he made to not be able to be here. But nevertheless, he persisted. And of course, Dan reluctantly here as well, as I am reluctantly in a state of being. We got a lot of really fun topics to go over. It's been a quaint month since we've done this, doing our whole quarantine business, all of us figuring out our video equipment stuff. The really quick update, stuff we were talking about doing a show. There is Biden, who is the ambassador of blackness now, deciding who is black and who isn't. I don't know who gave him the coon card, but we'll figure out that. We'll have a discussion about that. COVID-19 is going to have, still have some stuff going on with COVID-19. We're going to figure out where that's going and if Trump possibly win from this. We have a little bit of talk about Venezuela as well.
come on, man.
What? I'm just, come on, I'm just hosting it. I'm just doing the show.
Oh my God.
I'm just saying, who gave Joe Biden the authority?
No, don't say it again.
Who was at a party with Biden and said, hey, you know what? You one of us. I'm going to give you a pass. I'm going to give you a pass. Anytime you want to say the N-word, you get one pass. It's like, who actually did that? I don't know. But while we're talking about Joe Biden, a big part of our last episode was about Tara Reid and the sexual assault allegations that were against Joe Biden. And at the time, the main reason we were talking about it was an outrage surrounding how quickly the Democrats abandon, listen to the women's story and listen to what they're coming out with and saying, and let the story develop before jumping to conclusions. How quickly they pivoted from that during what they did during the whole Me Too era to quickly defending Joe Biden, no matter what. So in the month that's passed, the story has developed. Tara Reid has gotten to speak out a little bit. There have been parts of her story that have been corroborated, and there have been parts of her story that are getting like messy and inconsistent. So it already seemed like the Democratic Party was going to move along past and give Biden a pass for anything regardless. But especially now, as the case is like not as potentially a bombshell as it looked like it could have been, it's just being kind of brushed away to the wayside. So I guess that's like the major update.
Well, what were you like parts that got messy? Like what do you mean by that? Like what were you referring to about her story?
Hang on. Because there's just lately been inconsistencies in the Tara Reid story that a lot of reporters have talked about. So like there are a lot of
like I've heard about her character as a person, but I don't know about hearing anything about
it. Wasn't a person, but like based on what she told people at different times. So a lot of this is like what corroborating witnesses are hearing and being able to talk about during as journalists are basically reaching out and getting an idea of like what their side of the story is, what Tara Reid's not friends but her acquaintances around the time, just to be able to build a picture. And some of the sources or some of the people corroborating the story are saying one version of events that contradicts other aspects. I'm not going to pretend to know all the details or be able to get into it, but a lot of the reporters who knew about the Tara Reid story and were reporting on it but hesitated on coming out with it mentioned that they had certain like questions about the story. Not that they didn't want to report to the fullest extent, but to say like, okay, in general, the allegations, I'm not able to confirm the allegations as thoroughly as I would like to before I say like on the record, on an article that I'm putting my name on, that former vice president sexually assaulted Tara Reid in this way that's being described. And as with a lot of these things, I think the truth is usually somewhere in the middle. Like you only get like 2 points in these stories. Like one person's range of the perspective and the other person's range, the truth is somewhere in the middle. And because we'll never really find that out concretely, it's just going to be us like, or people who are investigating this closely, kind of like looking in the middle. So it's hard to tell.
I mean, like I saw the interview that Biden did when he denied that it happened. I guess I didn't see the entire thing, but I don't know if whoever that was asking him the question asked him if he ever had any encounter with her. Like, because if I'm not mistaken, she asked him if he assaulted her and he said, no, never happened. But like, I don't know if she asked him like, well, did you guys like ever do anything? You know, I don't know if she asked him that or if anybody's asked him that, because that would be the question. If he's saying that didn't happen, then like, okay, did anything happen? Or are you saying this person is flat out lying? Like y'all never even like had any kind of sexual encounter, you know?
That's an important question.
Because then you can get into like whether, you know, and I'm not saying this on any side, but like, then you can get into whether like he thought it was consensual and she didn't or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think, I guess one question I could potentially have, not to spend too much time on this, but is like, how is the right way for this to get sussed out? Because right now you have Tara Reid going to different news outlets. So like when she went to different news outlets, they're asking her about her story. And these journalists are kind of genuinely trying to figure out, okay, how can we vet this and how can we source this to make sure it's as strong and credible of reporting as we can, because then it looks bad on these news outlets if they end up reporting the story and it's completely false. So they're trying to cover their tracks as well. I just can't really picture a way to do this well, honestly. And then that's just kind of like the messy thing about it. And even like if you decide to say, okay, everything involving Joe Biden is a bunch of different factors coming into this like gumbo, right? And this is, Tara Reid is going to be an aspect of it. I'm just going to separate out of entirely because I can't tell either way what this is. What we do know about Joe Biden's, I mean, he has a history of advocating for women in the Violence Against Women Act. He also has a history of being really touchy with women. And then there's Anita Hill. Mm. There's like a bunch of stuff you can weigh with where you don't necessarily need Tara Reid to figure out what your calculus is of Joe Biden's stance on women and Joe Biden's stances more broadly. Because this was, again, like to me, a lot of the takeaway from the Tara Reid angle was how quickly Democrats were able to pivot based on a political angle, which is the same type of like political calculation that we say Republicans do all the time. They're just like coldly politically calculating creatures. I think the frustrating thing is that like Democrats are coldly politically calculating features, but they shoot other parts of their coalition in the foot every time they do this. And then when they could be politically calculating, they're never doing strong political calculations against the the party they're opposing. They're just doing strong political calculations to protect what little crumbs they have left. And that seems to be like, it's that activity that more than the allegations themselves kind of is the lasting story that I take from this whole affair, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm sure Sean and Caesar have something to say too, but I just want to say this, like when, with like you're saying with the political calculations, like, I mean, on that level, I just wasn't really surprised that like the establishment Democrats basically did the same thing that the establishment Republicans did with Trump.
Like, yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
That's what I expect from that level of politician and party people. Like, I just expect that, like, you know,
it's the level of partisanism that's in the country.
Like, I don't expect anything like, you know, moral or like, you know, I don't expect it on that level. So yeah, like when it came out, I'm like, yeah, he probably did that. And that's what people chose, you know, like that's what, I mean, sadly, like, and that's what people chose with Trump too. Like, that's what a lot of people don't care about stuff like that. Like, I might care, we might care, but there's a lot of people that's like, yeah, whatever. Like, and that speaks to a, you know, a very sad state of affairs in the country. And when we're talking about on a federal level, like it's very corrupt and you're picking from garbage, man. Like, that's what you're doing.
I think for me, it just seems like that for Joe Biden and almost the Democratic Party, that the best time for them to flip-flop their stance on this is right now, because the news is so busy with what's going on in terms of, we're talking about the pandemic and everything going on, that if this was just a dead period and we're just talking about the build up to the election, you know, we talk about this being the year, you know, about elections, but it's not necessarily the number one talking point worldwide. So the number one talking point worldwide is everything going on with coronavirus. So as long as that's kind of like still in the news, I think it deflects some of the energy away from that. It sucks because there should be a lot of focus. We should be taking a lot of focus into what Tara Reid's saying and kind of going more into this, because like Bam said, it's what was the state of questions they're asking them? Like, you could ask somebody, oh, did you have any kind of physical altercation with this person? That's a different question asking if you like rape them or violate them. That's a totally different level of a question. And because someone who maybe either is sick or twisted or just sees things differently could be like, yeah, we had something, but I thought it was like consensual. In my mind, it was different. So it's about just starting to set the scene up to knowing what was their like relationship in general in terms of two people in the same space. Were they just pass buyers? Were in the same, like, it's so much to dive into. But I feel like people kind of in America, I guess, in general, the population doesn't really care as much about that. They seem to just care about, like, they don't really care about deciding a president based upon what he's done to a woman or what he's done in the past with other people. Because, like you said, we saw what happened with Trump. There was that and the grabbing women by their privates and all this other stuff was going on. People only cared in terms of making it a funny video or a highlight or something to talk about to get views, but it didn't affect his presidency or his election at all.
Yeah. unfortunately. Moving on into much brighter news, or of course not. Well, it's definitely an interesting move. So Joe Biden, shout out to Joe Biden, supporting black media and elevating black media. God. And he decided to go on the Breakfast Club with Charlamagne the God and all them. And it was an interesting interview, to say the least. I'll preface this in that I'll be fair to Joe Biden in this stance, in that as his campaign, him speaking is a lose-lose choice. Like, 100%. If Joe Biden speaks more, then he is going to run into more situations like what we're about to talk about. If he speaks less, then he is the AWOL, he's the AWOL presidential nominee. And that doesn't look good either. So, like, he's in a rough spot. And I think that with that being said, the careful calculations, like, I'm not becoming the Biden show, y'all, but, like, the careful calculations of when to put him out there is probably, like, the least bad option of all of them politically. So whatever. But yeah, he's going to, on the Charlamagne the God's show, and I'll probably put the clip in here, but the gist of it is at the end, Charlamagne the God is talking to him about what should be his final pitch about. Wait, what do you want to say?
Well, can I just say the stats on it before you say this part? Because, like, the like and dislike ratio
on what?
Oh, God.
On the video.
Please tell me.
Yeah. It is 8,700 likes, 12,000 dislikes. So now you can say why it has that.
It's pretty bad.
Although, actually, never mind. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a thing called a tease where you want to get to the idea of the video quickly before you.
Yeah.
But yeah, Joe Biden said that he insinuated that if you're, when he was asked to make a case against, like, what is, like, why do you choose Trump over Biden? Like, why do you choose Biden over Trump? Like, make that case. Biden basically said, well, if you're picking Trump over Biden, then you ain't black. Because Joe Biden gets to knight the whoever is black. It's like the bar mitzvah. Every time when you're 13, you meet Joe Biden somewhere at a cathedral, and he knights thee and says, here's your Glock, you may now be black. Like, I don't know what exactly is the premise behind this or what's
here's
going
your,
on.
Here's your Reaganomics, you can now be black.
There are some fucking, like, galaxy brain takes that were about this. I forget. There was @NHannahJones, who, in defense of Biden, tweeted, quote, there's a difference between being politically black and being racially black. I'm not defending anyone, but we all know this and should stop pretending that we don't. So Joe Biden is politically black. Well, like at what point do you get to be politically black? Like, did Thomas Jefferson get his own way into being politically black somehow? Like, what factor
what
is
does
that?
Mean? I don't know. What the hell does that mean?
It's literally nonsense. It's like saying you... It's like saying you're black by association politically. How do you do, like, what's going on? I don't
That'd
know.
Be like me saying I'm Nat Turner. Like, no, I'm not. What the hell? What does that even mean?
I don't think it's the same, but
no, but like it's a non sequitur.
No, that's like it doesn't.
The ideal non sequitur in saying that you have an ability to say, like, who is and who isn't black, as Joe Biden. Like, I did make the point that if any white dude on earth is allowed to, I mean, no white dude on earth is going to be allowed to make this joke, but if anyone's going to get a quick forgiveness for this, it's going to be the vice president of Barack Obama. So, like, that's it's a kind of a sad fact of the matter. This is one of his classic gaffes, but, like, I'm just so numb to how quickly people seem to be like, ooh, that's Joe Biden, but hey, yeah, what can we do? It's not like we had a primary and we were able to choose other candidates.
I mean, I'm gonna keep it so real right now. Like, I heard that and I just it doesn't, like, I'm not moved by that. I was supporting Bernie, and, like, let's be real. Joe Biden got into the primaries where there was a lot of black people, and they put his ass in there. Mm-hmm. And there are, okay, on a popular level, let me just say, I don't give a goddamn about Joe Biden. I would never support Joe Biden, and I'm not going to vote for him. I live in California. I don't need to. there is no like black conservative Trump supporter people that any of us respect, probably. Like, these people are buffoons. Like, they sound crazy.
They're Uncle Tom's.
I don't know.
The Candace Owens, the Tim Blacks.
Go ahead.
He said, I can. Look at this. We got Sean Biden right here.
Yeah, already.
Like, these Kanye. I don't know all of them, obviously, but, like, there's some, like, NRA guy. Like, these guys are clowns. Like, there's none of the, like, black conservative, like, out there people. I don't respect any of what they have to say ever. Ben Carson, Clarence Thomas is the worst Supreme Court justice probably ever. He's the worst.
What about Larry Elder? Come on, Larry Elder.
I don't even know.
What about Larry Elder?
They're
that's a black conservative.
I'm not co-signing what Biden said. It's the wrong thing to say. But like, he's already, like, what are you supposed to say, dude? Like, you're going to tell me, like, if you're talking to Charlemagne, you're going to say, Charlemagne, you're telling me right now that you are going to vote for Trump over me because of blackness?
No, it's just it's a question that, like, as, like, Charlemagne the God, and this is a thing that
he's hosts, also a buffoon, too. Like, he's silly, too.
Yeah, and we shouldn't be no one should be taking a political position from Charlemagne the God, but anyone as an interviewer has to put themselves in the position of someone who is going to be asking the question, who has way less knowledge than the interviewer or the interviewee, because especially someone like Joe Biden, who is running as to be the president, he's going to have to make this case to other black people and say, hey, here's why you may be black, you may have fallen for all the propaganda, you support Trump for whatever reason, here's why that's wrong. That's an unfortunate reality that Joe Biden has signed himself up for, unknowingly or not, that he's gonna have to like try to make that case at least somewhere, especially in the South. And like, however successfully or not, this is an opportunity for him to try that. And to say you ain't black, when the black conservative argument is that the Democrats have black people on a plantation, it is just like powerfully bad messaging. And the other point, like the reason, like I'm not upset by the statement, obviously, like I'm just numb to it. Like whatever, this shit happens every day. I can't let the stuff get to me. Right. But
yeah,
like someone who doesn't have that experience speaking as though they can dictate that experience, it speaks to a level of disrespect that like, some people, it's the same reason why Hillary Clinton rubbed people the wrong way. It's just like, I don't like her. I just don't like the way she deals with people. I don't like the way she talks of people or speaks to people.
Is it similar to how she did it with women? Like getting with the women vote and stuff, is it kind of similar to that?
Treating it like an afterthought, yeah. There's like, oh, you're a woman, of course you're going to vote for me. It's like you're being reduced down to a category politically, which is like, yeah, this is how political people talk, but this is not how real people talk. Sorry, Bam, go ahead.
But... like, and I'm not saying this is how I view it. I juxtapose Joe Biden with Donald Trump only. Like, that's who he is competing against. I don't like nobody's expecting the president to do anything for anybody. Nobody's expecting that from the president, really. Like, I'm juxtaposing Joe Biden with Donald Trump. Donald Trump said way more worse stuff than Joe Biden. Sadly, a lot of people in the media are not gonna be like, well, okay, Joe Biden said that's fucked up, but look at this shit that Donald Trump is saying. Like, they're not going to do that. Mm. And a lot, and especially when it comes to like social media and like comment sections, like all the shit's like right leaning. Like, whenever you go into a comment section or like social media, like the like right wing bots or whatever run that shit. Even if Joe Biden said everything perfect on that Breakfast Club video, I promise you it'd be more dislikes than likes. Anytime they have some person affiliate with the Democratic Party on there, the ratio is always terrible.
I mean, so I don't want to conflate too many different things because like
let me say one more thing too. Donald Trump will never go on the Breakfast Club, ever. He will never be available for any kind of black media like that. He will never make himself available.
I mean, first of all, that's wrong. He will definitely go on like black media if it's Candace Owens or Larry Elder Colin Noir.
If we're calling that black media, then Joe Biden gets to say what he said if we're calling that black media. And if he went on the Breakfast Club,
Jesse Lee Peterson.
Imagine Charlamagne asking him those questions that he asked Joe Biden, which I honestly doubt he would do. Donald Trump isn't held to the same standard as like, even no, Joe Biden's not. Insane. Like he's barely sane, but like Donald Trump isn't held to any standard. And that's the part that I find frustrating. I don't care about Joe Biden, but it's frustrating that Donald Trump gets held to no standard. Why does everybody else get criticized like they have a standard and he doesn't? That's the part that's frustrating for me.
To me, it's just like a false equivalency kind of narrative where the media has to feel that we have to keep things both sides. And honestly, a lot of the media right now is like, Trump is failing the coronavirus response. Trump is doing this bad and this bad. They're like, okay, what is Joe Biden doing bad? I mean, he's barely speaking out anywhere. They're covering for Joe Biden in other places. Like, he has no power. Tara Reid, but they're saying like,
yeah.
He has no role in society. He's a private citizen. He doesn't have any power.
Okay, but who's making that judgment? Are you and the media making that judgment? Definitely not.
They should. They should. Joe Biden
not is really. Because he's the leader of the Democratic Party at this point.
Yeah, but he's not. To my knowledge, he's not in the Senate anymore. He's not in Congress. He's not the president. He's not the vice.
Okay, but like if we rated what was covered on the news based on like power, yes, it's tilted towards the president. But there's a lot of stuff having to do with power that isn't on the news. Then
I agree.
News that cover other stuff. So like I think you're just conflating your arguments too much. Where like, are we saying that Joe Biden's comment is sort of irrelevant to the
people
who are ultimately going to see the message? Or are we saying that because the media is not focusing on Donald Trump enough? Like, what dichotomy? I mean, like, I understand what dichotomy is being made here, but like,
I'm saying that Joe Biden saying that is wrong. It's wrong. I'm speaking in a black context. I'm not talking about like the major media. I'm speaking like in the black context. He's saying that's wrong, but is it going to be like, see, look, the plantation or whatever, look how they treat black people and just look at the Democrats in a bubble and not look at the Republican part? I pay attention to a lot of like what the black conservative people say, and like not just the famous people, but like people that are somewhat famous too. You can't even get them to say the Republican Party. They don't even say the word Republican. It's just Democrats, Democratic Party.
Jesse Lee Peterson. Yeah.
They don't ever even, like they act like Mitch McConnell doesn't exist. Like Lindsey Graham doesn't. They don't. So in that context, it's like, okay, well, yeah, I think you kind of mentioned in the beginning, he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. Because he's not going to get those black conservative people. That's not going to happen.
Right. I just think that so a lot of what we talk about when we're talking about the media is very political media, and that's very niche. Like it's a small percentage of the overall population that's watching that. And that doesn't really have that much of an overlap with the Breakfast Club. The Breakfast Club is a lot more of like, no, I'm just being real. Like the Breakfast Club is less comparable to like Sean Hannity's show, and it's more comparable to the Today Show. It's more comparable to like a morning show. So like, it's a slightly different perspective. So like, are you going to have a lot of like, are you going to have a lot of people who are just not very politically engaged, who like, they don't call themselves black Republicans, but they're black people who like voted for Obama one time and are kind of like friendly to Trump at another time. Like they're not like militantly anti-Trump, because I think that's where it is with black people. It's like they're either hard anti-Trump, never gonna happen, or like they for some reason allow like a maybe possibly in their head to kind of permeate and go about. And so if you're reducing it to that binary of two different types, then the way you are going to reach that kind of type, the closest way you will in media that'll have like the most high of an impact is probably something like Breakfast Club. It's something like one of those Today Show kind of things. And so to compare that platform to a lot more like hard political media, which I think has a lot of the biases you're talking about, but is ultimately catering to a different, much more niche audience. Like that difference in platform has to kind of go through there. But like, I don't know. Go ahead.
Caesar looks bored in the corner right now. He hasn't said anything in like 20 minutes.
Like, I feel like I'm talking a lot. I apologize, but
go ahead.
It's hard for me to kind of like like, I think all of us are like pretty politically savvy and like intelligent and like can, you know, see things on a kind of higher level. It's hard for me to kind of like reduce my political acumen to be like watching a Joe Biden Breakfast Club interview. Like, that shit just don't matter. You know what I mean? Like, so when I see it and it's like, oh man, look what he said. It's like, if we're talking about like what he said, like if it's going to be like those three words, what he said, I'm not going to be blowing up over Joe Biden, what he said when we got this fool in the White House.
Who says the wildest shit.
Like, literally, this dude said that COVID-19 was a Democratic hoax. You can't get worse than that for me.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely, and that's why, it's part of the reason I like doing a show that's not tied to the daily, weekly news cycle, because then you just get caught up in, this is today's outrage. Hard pass.
Do it weekly, man, come on.
Once you get your paid bots to talk about how much they want to hear about weekly Russiagate, and once we get those comments on our social media, then absolutely we'll talk about the publishing schedule. Let's talk about your question, your COVID question, really fast. Let's, Caesar, come on. Is there any comments, thoughts? Is the whole conversation bullshit? I don't know. How you doing?
No, good. How you doing? I think to me, like, I actually just wanted to sit down and kind of listen to you guys' opinion on this, because for me, like, I watched the Breakfast Club interview, and like, I had to get to that part to where he said it. So I'm like, I just think it's really whack that Joe Biden is going to bring a discussion point that's going to like separate black people and where they stand in between. Like, is it okay for him to say this or not? Is it cool? Like, that's really whack that this is the dude that's going to like cause a discussion within the community. Like, that's the biggest L from all this. Like, here's Joe Biden splitting us up on where we stand and like having people Google any kind of black conservatives that are legit. So I thought like that was really whack in a sense, but to me, it's like I didn't even think about what Dan said earlier about it being a lose-lose for him. I mean, like, honestly, like, if he talks less, then we all know that he doesn't know how to speak right. So it's like, we know he can't handle himself, but if he talks more, he just makes himself look like a fool. So at the end of the day, like, is it that bad in terms of strategy-wise for him to go out and say wild stuff? No, because like Bam said, Trump says this stuff literally every Thursday. After 3 days of doing the health reports, the third day he starts getting off because he's over it. So it's like he's going to say something wild at the end. He's going to talk about go ahead and sip on some Windex with your wine or whatever the hell. So it doesn't even matter at this point. I think that I'm I'm very thankful I live in a country where I have the choice if to vote or not, or to who to vote for, because it sucks to be in a situation where it's like that would be the two people, and if it was a law for us having to vote for one of those two, that would really suck, honestly. Like, that'd be really rough, because then it'd feel like you don't really have a freedom, you know. It'd feel like we don't have freedom, because that, in a sense, then I'm like, I just can't believe that this is like gonna be the final two. You know, who's going to get the rose or not? Like, it's really whack.
That's who we got, man.
Nice.
The lesser of two war criminals.
Right. It's like, so, Ben, one of your questions coming into this was like, will COVID-19, will all this stuff benefit Trump? You say if we have elections in this country again. I think that's a strong take for this. But I think
they tried to do New York.
Here's what it is with reality, right? Like, we know, we can state the facts, and we could say that, like, no government or no real agency handled this perfectly, because this is a thing that you can't really handle perfectly. You're going to be able to look at every individual response and say, like, China should have done this, Italy and France should have done this, New York should have done this, Canada and California should have done this. Like, everything's going to be... New Zealand shouldn't have done this, or it's good they did this. Like, they're being put on a pedestal now just because they got good results. But diseases and pandemics are more complicated to go into than, and Brazil's out here. Of course, got to look at Brazil.
All right,
but yeah, it's
guilty.
We can all see the facts, is what I'm saying, of this era and how it happened. none of the facts matter. It's all about who spins it and how well does that spin stick in the discourse. And so, like, I can't predict the spin. It usually skews towards whatever happens on Fox News being the ultimate, like, winner of the day. So, like, whatever narrative they say, they just keep repeating it, and then overall that's just, like, how it's believed to be.
So here's one thing that I noticed is normally during, like, crises and whatnot, presidential approval goes up almost every time. If there's a war going on, if there's a catastrophe, something, whatever it is, presidential approval almost always goes up. Trump's remained stagnant for his approval rating during the crisis so far.
Pretty flat.
Which is interesting for me. So, because Mama's asking me this, actually, she said, do you think, like, who do you think has, like, a step in the right direction for the election? I go, right now, you can't call it. Before the crisis, I would say that Joe Biden had no chance. But because of the crisis, I think this is one thing that may put into Trump's, maybe his undoing is the amount of press conferences and stuff he's had, to where more of the public can see him speak, more of the public can see his policies and stuff be enacted in place, especially with how many millions of people have lost their jobs and the government not doing anything for them. So that's the one thing that I think could definitely be Trump's undoing.
I think, like, that would be a fair point if he was kind of just held to that. But I don't feel like he's ever held to that. I feel like anything that kind of happens negative to him, he's able to revert into like, oh, the machine is working against him. Like, that's what it always feels like. Like, even if Bam said the Bam's question, oh, like, if we let's say the elections, like, this season, like, more like digital based or something like that, right? You know, in the past, like, he could literally just bring up some argument about, like, oh, well, they hacked and rigged the system, so, you know, we got to do some kind of recount. Then they go to the Supreme Court, and because it's a pandemic, it'll have some kind of standing in there. I can just imagine the fiasco that happens that if things just don't go his way. His like, group of sheep or whatever that like to play this game, they like to play the victim role when things are just kind of not going right. So,
oh, for sure.
What happens, anything that happens wrong to him, he turns it into him being from the big badass dude to being, I'm a victim. They're playing me because I'm the only one that keeps it real. And it's like, until we work together to devise a proper, like, way of speaking, debating, bringing up talking points, being held accountable, then there's not going to be any progress made forward. And he's not going to, like, really, he's not really going to suffer. Like, he's not really going to pay his dues. Like, whatever he does, he has no kryptonite right now. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to end up benefiting him. I mean, I hate to sound like that, or I don't like to be, like, pessimistic, but, you know, like, I know I just said this, but, like, I can't even get over him saying it's a Democratic hoax. I can't even get over that. Like, I cannot get over that. Like, how the hell does somebody get to say that? And it's just like, oh, well, you know, just the next day.
You brush it under the rug.
I mean, not only that, but it's working. There have been, like, these viral videos of these people who are at the lines of Gelson's and Costco who, like, won't go in because they say, they won't wear their mask in store because they say, oh, all the stuff is overblown. If everyone else is wearing a mask. People are getting, multiple people have been shot.
Yeah.
And the logic behind this is, oh, well, the media is overblowing the numbers. It's a hoax. It's, some of this is overblown. It's just China going into, like, all of the things that have been at one point or another repeated as talking points within right-wing media are now being used as justifications, surprise, surprise, for why people are deciding not to wear masks in public.
Well, yeah, that's what happens when your country has complete right bias in general, too. So,
and that's another fact as well.
Because ever since dumbass Bill, who didn't get his dick sucked by that woman, decided to reach across the aisle and do the entire political system the right, and then you got a giant spiral downward for the past 25 plus years. So,
I don't know.
The Clinton Gingrich reach around.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't know what was
Planet Newt.
I don't know what was worse, Coon Card or that, but yeah, I mean, it is just frustrating. I mean, honestly, the whole thing is just, for me, frustrating because I just see, like, him just get away with everything. And then, I mean, we're not going to get into this all the way yet, but like, or if at all, but like, then the part that's even more frustrating for me is that the people on the left in the media that I like to listen to, like, even they don't hold him accountable.
There's very few that do. There's a couple that do, but a lot of them, they kind of brush it under. Or they bring up, or they just yell at.
Like, they're just mad at Democrats all the time. And I'm like, okay, like, I get it. But, like, there's also this person in the White House, man. Like, can he get some attention? The dude said, it's a Democratic hoax, man. Come on, yo. Like, how do you go from that to Fred the Godson died? I never heard one of his songs.
Like, literally, like, areas are having, like, 1,000 people dying in 24 hours. And you're talking about like a hoax. Like, it just doesn't, like, it doesn't.
Did he ever apologize? Did he ever apologize for that?
No, you know what happens? The next day he comes and talks like it's nothing. And then if someone ever tries to come at him and be like, hey, like, don't you think you're doing this? He gets the.
You're rude. You're an idiot. You're trash. You're fake news.
Like, what the hell? Like,
I can't. I know I'm going off, but like, I literally seen a dude get beat up by the cops for jaywalking. Yo, I seen that with my own eyes. I saw it. They pulled out batons and beat him on the hood of a police car. I saw that. I don't want to live in a place where nobody
holds
accountable ever. Yep. Ever, dude. Like, somebody just say something. Talk about him. Have some ball. Just go. Hey, is this still a Democratic hoax? Ask him that every single day when he does a press conference. Make him answer that.
Yeah, and so it's up to... Either, yeah, like the.
It's up to you, Dan. It's up to you. We're all hedging our bets on you, man.
Come on, Dan. Step up.
Y'all gotta go to an entire different stock market.
I'm looking at you, man. Dan, you're my top five political journalist person. You're top five for me. I'm looking at you.
There are. Jesus Christ.
If you were an affiliate of Sean, you'd be top three for me.
Asshole.
I've actually done metrics. It's the Suarez bump that I get.
Coon and Clinton Dixon.
Hey, what's in your wallet? But the main point I have from this.
Top six after you said Coon card. Top six.
Again, I just want you to imagine Samuel L. Jackson going, what's in your wallet?
Oh, don't bring Sam. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
I think so. I hate aspects of these conversations. I hate because they sound very pretentious. But I think the
get it cracking.
The defining thing that Trump did to our politics, I think, was to allow us to take a lot of the empathy out of it. So like, we're just so numb. We've seen every sort of extreme thing happen, and we've also seen the response be, "Oh, absolutely nothing's happening." We've seen, of course, I'm extending this past to. Past Trump, because it's not just Trump who brought about all these things. It's like a societal thing that was happening up to this point. But we had an elementary school shooting where kids died, and we did nothing about that. We have had, we've had everything that's going on in the border right now, nothing's happening. Everything that happened with our foreign policy blunders that we're having with Syria, with Iraq, and all that, we're just moving past it. We're just going on days. Everything else is just moving forward through that. And because of that lack of accountability, which comes from a top down, because if the leaders at the top go and say, oh, this thing you did, we're not going to do anything else. We're going to stop politics as it generally works on a day-to-day basis until we get justice for this wrong that was done. Then we would all see, okay, that's the example. We can all look for, or we can look back to that in our historical memory and say, that's what happens when you do something, at least something bad of this caliber. I think it's a thing that goes down structurally because it starts with the Republican Party making a calculation and saying, by going with Trump no matter what and reaffirming that what he's doing is correct, giving him a pass on things, yeah, some of it's going to be kind of ugly, but we can retain power in the long term. And then we can signal to our supporters that this is good behavior, so long as you support Team Us, then you can actually change the structure of politics. So that, I think, to answer your top question of what does this do in the polls for November? I think the saddest thing is this coronavirus is going to be like a net nothing. Like it's like Tara Reid, it just doesn't move the needle at all. I think people's ideas about Joe Biden and Donald Trump are really just built in, and we are just down to like the coin flip of like of
Dumb and Dumber.
See, here, like, if there was a stronger candidate for the Democratic nominee, it would sway more in their favor right now. But the problem too is that since Biden is such a shit candidate, where you have so many disenfranchised people right now, like obviously all four of us are disenfranchised, that is one thing where you have people like, well, who is the lesser of two evil? Like, what is going to directly impact me? And then if there was somebody stronger in as the head, then I think it would sway way more into that side too.
Yeah, and that's the other point about disenfranchisement is that even with the Charlemagne Biden conversation earlier, you're not just talking to potential voters, you're talking to people who are like, okay, please get me
win me over.
Yes, exactly. Like, win me over. Please get me like motivated enough to even consider voting for you, Joe Biden. Exactly. Oh, I ain't black. Okay, never mind. Oh, you're even gonna get in that conversation. Okay, like I'm not
Not gonna do Medicare for all, you're not gonna end the war, you're not gonna do this and that. And well, you're like, all right, bye.
For Joe Biden's credit, Charlemagne was literally, he started off saying this is gonna be about black stuff. And Charlemagne has always, like, whenever the politicians come, he's like, what's your black agenda? To the extent that he was somebody that was like, I'm down to, what was his name? Pete Buttigieg and some other person, I forgot, just because they had a black agenda, just like a file, like whatever it was. So Joe Biden does have that. He has the Frederick Douglass Initiative or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah,
I think it's capped personally, but for somebody like Charlemagne, that's all he wants. And that's what there's a large segment of the black community that wants to hear, I have, like, you have a black agenda. Trump does not have that. I guess maybe at some point when he feels the need to say that, he will. But like, Biden does have that thing. Now, I don't know what else he was saying up until the end where he said, you ain't black part. But I guess if he cut that out and just said, like, yeah, I got this black agenda, it's 400 pages, Frederick Douglass, what else do you want? You know? What else you guys want? I mean, if he said
that, Biden should have ended the interview by going, hey, I have this plan, don't get uppity.
Yeah, right. But literally, someone like Charlemagne, he was all in, I can't remember who the other person was, but he was like, no, they got a black agenda, so I'm in it.
No, but I mean, like, I get, not to get into it too much, but this is why we shouldn't listen to Charlemagne the God, because every single Democrat has a black agenda, like little tab on there.
Yeah.
Warren had a plan for black people too. Like everyone,
Bernie definitely does.
Hidden document on Google, you know, just.
I mean, yes and no. Like, not all of them have like a specific thing where they're like, this is my plan, black agenda thing. But there's
no one's voting on. There's no poll to say that, like, even black people vote on those black agenda. Like, it's a useful rhetorical message. It's a useful rhetorical thing, but ultimately it's just day-to-day drivel.
Well, and honestly, like, a lot, like, and I think you were just saying this, like, most people are kind of already know who they're going to vote for.
Yes.
Regardless. And it was sad. I think a lot of us had a lot of hope in the whole Bernie thing. And, you know, it just didn't work out because there's just a lot of, you know, we don't have a lot of political education, you know, then it's just a lot of name recognition. And
that's how Trump got.
Yeah, ultimately, that's
one of the biggest ways that Trump got won, because a lot of people knew his name, and there's like, oh, he's not a politician, let's vote him in. And
yeah.
On the topic of left media, because bam, this is your bugaboo and you're really like upset about it. Like, why is in your framing of things, it should definitely be a fault of like online left media, some of them, for basically not being focused. I think the issue with what you're saying is there's a lack of focus. If everyone in the left-wing media decided that we are going to pin Trump on the time he said that the pandemic was a Democratic hoax, and we're going to hammer that nonstop until that becomes a not a meme in a joke point. Sense, but yeah, some mainstream talking point, much the same way Fox just, I'm going to repeat it and I'm going to repeat it and I'm going to give this a name. Oh, it was the Trump lie. Like you give it like the, like Trump.
Because Americans are, they like catchy shit.
Branding.
They like TikTok videos and stuff. So you got to stoop down high level, unfortunately.
Well, TikTok is Chinese, but whatever.
But Americans love that shit.
You know, I'm going to say two things here. One of them might be kind of silly, but I remember some years back, I apologize already, but
Christ.
Caesar's like, I deal with this shit enough on We Made It.
Dead ass.
Whoa.
Turn it off.
I think it was the BET Hip Hop Awards. And I remember they did the whole Shady record.
See, shut up.
That'd be funny if everybody just will cut off.
Never turn the camera off.
They did a Shady Records freestyle or whatever. I don't know if you guys ever seen that, but so Eminem is last, and I've never been an Eminem fan. I've never liked an Eminem song in my life, but I will give him respect as a talented, you know, writer and lyricist. His rap, I remember, was not even trying to be that clever, but this was like around the time like Trump got elected or was like just about to get, I forgot. I think it was when he was just elected or he was running. I can't remember, but there's a lot of support for him. Eminem literally got on there and was like, if you're a Trump supporter, fuck you. I don't want you as a fan. And I was like, bravo. I can respect that. There's a lot of these people in the left-wing media. Like, I know that they're trying to get Trump people or like those fringe Trump people, kind of alt-righty people. Like, I know that that's the people they
name get. Them.
Name the people that are like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben Norton, Max Blumenthal, Anya Parenpil, who got her.
Blumenthal for sure.
Parenpil, who got her Tucker Carlson video tweet pinned for over a year. Who's supposed to be some principal leftist? You got a goddamn white supremacist, racist, loser, rich cuck fuckboy tweet still pent for over a year.
First of all, you will not disrespect the king of the Swanson frozen meal fortune over whatever. Here. Because Tucker Carlson is actually related to the Swanson family frozen dinners. But the second thing is like, here's honestly the point where I always differ from you here is that I don't even remember the names of two people you just said. Like, I think these people are so fucking irrelevant.
Blumenthal's the only big one, quote unquote. But the rest, they don't have that big of a following.
But wait, but can I finish? Can I finish?
Okay, sure.
Yeah, go.
Okay. I know that that's what they're trying to do. They might not be big, but they have some influence, and they're supposed to be principled leftist people. And I like have benefited from these people and learned a lot from them. But it's very whack when somebody like Eminem can get on there and say, I don't want Trump fans. I like, it wouldn't be a problem for me. Like, this is like what Trump, this is like a Trump with David Duke thing. Like, David Duke supporting you. Do you want his support? Well, I don't even know who he is. Oh yeah. It's like, why don't you come out and say, no, I don't want somebody like that to fuck with me. If that person likes me, then I'm doing something wrong. I was looking at these people's Twitters, a lot of them, and I'm not going to go through all the names because I can't remember. I just go through them every once in a while, unfollowed most of them. And I'm like, I wonder if they look back in 20 years at their Twitter, like what side do you sound like you're on?
Well, here's a question I have for you, because some of the left media figures that I listen to and have for a long time, what they've been saying over the past presidential cycle and stuff is that since there's a big part of the Rust Belt and stuff went for Trump, which is normally a part of the country that goes towards Democratic. Someone said the way like we should do, instead of saying fuck all of them, you're a Trump supporter, I don't like you, is going, hey, this is real, look at real populism, look at a real movement or something, and try to sway them that way into getting into it. And that's what I've heard a lot.
Well, I'm not talking about like regular people. I'm talking about people that's in the media that's like...
No, these are people in the media that I listen
they're,
to.
They're creating a narrative to try to get like these like alt-right little dudes who like pretend to care about foreign policy and like believe Trump about endless wars and stuff like that. Like, they're trying to get those people by continuously talking shit about Democrats, which is fine, but they never talk about Trump and Trump being an imperialist and expanding the wars and all that stuff. They never talk about it. I literally sat and listened to an interview with, what's her name? Anya Parnpill, somebody else. She's talking about the Venezuela thing. She don't even want to mention Trump's name. I'm like, you don't even want to mention, but if it's, but when it's Obama in Syria, it's Obama, 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 Obama administration. Hillary.
You gotta find some new lefties, because the stuff I hear is like, the lefties I follow is they say, for like the whole Venezuela thing, they were saying I wouldn't be surprised if Trump told them to do it, and they were saying this is probably going to go back and linked up to that guy, back up to Trump.
I do listen to those people too, but I'm just talking about the ones that are like that. It's frustrating. Like, it's not. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. Dan's muted. Somebody tell him he's muted.
Yeah, I just figured that out. It just happened.
Anyway, yeah, but
the thing is, you can keep, you can get angry as hell about these people online. Frustrated. Yeah, but like, frustrated, vexed, if you will, about these people on the internet. But like, what if they don't have much of a following, or if they're incredibly niche? Like, again, there's this like magical video in Hammer Space that does not exist, but I'm actually like nearly done with it. And in this video, I'm talking about essentially political hobbyism, which is, there are certain creators and there are people who just like make their livings off of making political content that people consume and they watch, but they're not necessarily learning anything from that. It's just like, it's just friends for them. But instead of like a sitcom with some like really zany white people, they just really want to watch, okay, I'm going to learn some like world history stuff, or I'm going to learn some like current events thing. So it's just like stuff that's on in the background for TV for people, but it's not something they're learning. It's not going to, people aren't even watching it with the intent purpose of making a difference. And in this case, like, there aren't even dozens of people watching this with the intent purpose of making a difference. So I would keep my powder dry for the cases of like, we usually talk about tactics. What tactic is the one that is going to be most helpful at getting the gettable, interested, people who like might be Trump friendly, but not necessarily Trump supporters, gettable to the Democrats,
the Obama Trump voters.
Sure, like you can talk about what strategy works for that. I think there are some like YouTubers who go into that strategy, and there are some who are in BAM strategy of, there isn't a lot of people who are winnable there, so don't bother and just point out how Trump is bad and how the Democrats don't go far enough. I think there's definitely a space there, BAM, where you just have people who are just circling the lowest level of the toilet drain, and they're getting the people who don't really watch for any real reason other than to get angry all the time at politics and hear it, and from a perspective that they want to hear it. No, like that's why Rush Limbaugh has been getting a check for fucking 4 decades. Like, that's how that's mm-hmm. it's a money making machine that you can do stuff like that. Just be a content mill for people to get angry at. But ultimately, it's just where you pick your battles. And
you're right, Dan. And honestly, like, this is like, my frustration is going away because I've kind of like,
see it for what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And that sucks, because, you know, you like somebody and you're like, you think that they're this person, and then you're like, okay, well, damn, dude. Like, you know, I think we talked about it in one of the other episodes, like, where it seems like even some of these like small independent media people are like kind of still using the corporate media tactics for whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, it's just like, it's just feeling let down by people. You know, there are people I listen to that I like and I agree with, and like, not that I necessarily got to agree with every single thing, but like, but Dan, you're still top six for me. And honestly, I'm just waiting for you. I'm waiting for you, man. I want to hear you.
Dan's retired.
They always say the best politicians or video, whatever, advocates are the ones who don't want to do it. So maybe by that standard, there's something there. But
yeah, if you do it, I'll tell everybody that I'll write a book and tell the story about how you destroyed me at the pool one day. I'll tell all book.
Oh no!
A jacuzzi.
Okay,
that's a
specific thing. He's already given up details, but go ahead. Sean, you better just be a regular person. Don't you become famous too? You're doomed.
We got.
I retired as a professional, so I'm good. Yeah. I'm out of limelight.
We got time to do Venezuela. I want to go into that because we were talking about it just a little bit in small details. That's kind of ridiculous how Harold and Kumar try to overthrow a Latin American country.
Yeah, and speaking of that, Bam, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump was into that. No, should we go over it, like, the whole thing first?
Yeah, I want to give listeners, the audience, the three people who have gotten to this point, kind of a backstory to what is going on with
Silver Core,
yeah. So
Florida, the ultimate Florida man.
The 30,000 foot view of the story is that behind even the Navy SEALs back, there was a like private military contractor who was literally just like battlefield bad companying their way through Venezuela, like doing every possible like fuck up you could along the way, and breaking every like possible rule. Literally, I think it got to the point where they tweeted out that they were about to ambush they were in Venezuela. Yeah.
Yeah, they tweeted at Trump, hey, we're gonna start operation, I don't know what it's called, blah blah blah. And like, okay. Solid.
Yeah. Someone said it was so mind-bogglingly dumb that we thought it was a misdirection.
Mm. Someone in the Venezuelan government, I think, said that.
No, that was someone from the U.S. Navy.
That's hilarious.
Still, it's just like, obviously, Maduro was able to kind of figure out what was going on through this very quickly because Silver Corp was doing such a terrible job of cutting their tracks. But like, I don't understand the connection necessarily, and so I'm wondering if anyone else does, between like, who in the U.S. government said Silver Corp, you're on this? Well, like, and where does it go from there?
Well, I mean, I think it could have been anybody. What's his name? Is it Abrams?
Pompeo?
Is it John? What's the Abrams guy's first name? I always forget. But I think anybody could have done it, but like just kind of throw those guys to the wolves. Like, you know, just see what happens. You know, I don't think they care, you know, to like, they may not be invested in any real way. I don't think the American military has the capacity to like truly invade Venezuela in the same way like Iraq was invaded. But
you don't think the U.S. military has the capability to invade? I definitely disagree with you.
Not in the same way that Iraq was invaded. I do not think that American military has that ability. I think those days are over, honestly. Not Venezuela. But I think that
back that up. What's the difference between Iraq 2000 to Venezuela 2020?
Like even ballooned further than Iraq and the amount of crap we have.
Well, I don't think that the American public is like going to be excited about a war like they were in the beginning of the Iraq war.
Oh yeah, but like step one in war is getting the American public behind you. That's definitely not it. Like, but yeah. What we're talking about does the U.S. military have the ability to
I think morale is a big thing. Like like 9/11 happens in October, America's bombing Afghanistan, and then like there's a whole anthrax scare drumming up to the Iraq war. Majority of America was like, yeah, go for it. Go kill Saddam. It didn't take long for that to become like, you need to get the hell out of there. I don't think you could ever get the American public to be down for a war with Venezuela, which would in turn make the soldiers' morale very low, which their morale in Iraq was very low. And I just don't think that the... Like, just flying over planes and bombing doesn't do anything. You have boots on the ground, and I do not think the American military at this point in time can go with boots on the ground and occupy Venezuela like they did in Iraq. I do not think that could happen.
I think that there's a big misconception upon how there's a series of events that led to what led to Iraq and why we're able to go to Iraq and what was happening, not just how America felt about going there, but just regionally within that area, why it was like easier for America to get in there than it would be to like Venezuela. I feel like Venezuela, people, the terrain is completely different than what you could do in Iraq. Like it's a desert is definitely an issue. But when you're talking about a place like we all kind of saw with Vietnam, just not just humidity alone, but different kind of landscapes, the hills, the mountains in Venezuela.
Gorillas. It's
insane. Some of these areas are separated different, but the miles isn't the issue. It's the elevation change in between getting to different cities and different regions. Second of
just
all,
like Vietnam,
America has been able to do literally whatever it wanted in Latin America and South America for a very long time. But there's like a line across, I believe, especially after recent years. And especially we talk about Iraq, we lost almost 5,000 troops, right? 32,000 casualties, 5,000 troops. And I think that a lot of people had served the time. That's still maybe American public we talked about doesn't matter. But I think a lot of soldiers and even vets kind of still don't feel too great about that, because that was 5,000 people that died and came home empty-handed. Like nothing was accomplished that was supposed to be this grand issue. None of it was all
weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, that never happened. So what are you gonna do? You want a minimum, like you want to send people down to boots on the ground to fight a war in Venezuela when there's a ton of like Latin influence just in general, like from connected to America to like Venezuela, like that connection might hit home harder than ever, because there's already like in America issues talking about people coming together as like the Latino culture and everything going on, to like go have a war against like a very big Latin country that doesn't really have a history in South America of having any kind of aggression against other countries within the region. It's not like this is like a place that has a rapport for being violent against other areas, and we need to step in there. It's almost like it's going to make people feel like, oh, are we going to just go down there based upon some fake rumor again? Is that what we're going to really do? People don't have a well-versed education about what happened to Venezuela. People don't have an education. Don't know what happened with Hugo Chavez and what's going on with Maduro now. People may pretend they do, but I don't think they really know what's going on. I think they just see the occasional random BuzzFeed video or something like that, and they think they know what's really happening down there. But to be honest with you, like, there's just a lot going on. And to think that America can all of a sudden out of nowhere do magic tricks and just pull out ability to go divert energy and soldiers and money all now down there, I think it's asking a lot, dude. Yes, America has high technology and comes to like combat and warfare, very true, but there's a limit to resource, there's a limit to money, there's a limit to what you can do in terms of that, to what you can do. And oh, I have stuff going on in the Middle East, we have this going on right now, we're still looking at Syria, blah, blah. Oh, we're gonna looking at this area, oh yeah, let's go ahead and go a full-fledged war against Venezuela, which, let's keep it real, it's not that far away, so don't play around. So I don't think life isn't just a video game where you can just do stuff because you like have the setup. Like, there's just real people going on. I think that's a reach. I just think that's the Venezuela thing to me, like, that was cute what they were trying to do, and there's going to be one person they pin into what, like, this went down, it's going to blow over. And I think that there's always going to be this consistency in picking at some of these countries, whether it's Cuba in the future or Venezuela, just kind of picking at, like, you know, oh, like, look what they've done, just to remind us about what happened in the past. But I don't think anything full-fledged will ever go forward, because that'd be ridiculous. I honestly, like, just for me, like, I couldn't even call myself an American if that's like went down. Like, if we went to boots on the ground in Venezuela, like, I can't do this anymore, dude. Like, it's just too much. I'm not even Venezuelan. Like, it's just too much.
I definitely disagree with you, but we should go into what happened with Silver Corps. Anyways, like, what the actual attempted coup. Because we kind of went off on a tangent. So a bunch of guys from Silver Corps, basically.
Operation Gideon.
Yeah, there we go, Operation Gideon. So Silver Corps is what, a private fund, mercenary group that's based out of Florida, correct?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
It's not just Americans. It's like an international group of a bunch of different humans. And they decided that they heard the drum beat and they said, fuck it, let's go get Maduro, because Whitey's got a lot of guns and shit.
And there's connections, because there's also J.J. Rendon, who was a right-wing political consultant and a critic of Maduro, who was had gotten involved and kind of gotten connected to this as well, was helping to even price out the is helping to like price out the deal as well. That's complaining that Silvercorp was just like had no. I mean, because this is the when people just to pause really quickly. But when military spending gets out of control, it's mostly because of contracts that happen in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. When we say, okay, the U.S. military isn't going to be building this cafeteria for U.S. military members. They're going to be fighting or doing the missions. Yeah, while we have Halliburton, while we have all these other companies build the infrastructure that we need, the temporary infrastructure for us. Well, as a business, which is where every like conversation goes downhill, but like as a business, you're in a situation where you have a client with a blank check and you're the only supplier. So you can be like, oh yeah, to build a cafeteria, if you want to build like a school cafeteria somewhere, maybe you'd like appraise it to be $500,000. Cafeteria in Iraq, $2 million. Fuck it, just $2 million. Getting eggs there, like $3 million. Like literally Coca-Cola, they were making the Coca-Cola machines. Mm-hmm. Like it charged like $8 to dispense the Coca-Cola there. Yeah, it's a little bit difficult to get like refrigerated soft drinks to Afghanistan. I'll concede that. But there's no reason that like basically all these private corporations decide to upcharge the U.S. government because they know they have no other choice to pay. And so, again, back to get to here, that's what these private military corporations will be like, $1 billion, $2 billion? Like, what the fuck? Let's dance.
It was like $200 million, right?
The war profiteers.
Billions, yeah. $1.5 billion.
Oh, I thought, damn, I saw $200 million.
Wait, they got 1.5? I thought, yeah, I did.
Million, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I thought the same. I'm like, if they got a bill, that's.
Sorry. We're both right. So, like, in the earlier parts, like when Rendon was talking about them, they were throwing out prices like $1 billion, $1.5 million.
Yeah, they asked for it.
But eventually, the prices ended up being around. So it was like basically like a retainer of $1.5 million plus future promises. So, like, $213 million from oil futures from Venezuela. Yeah, which is just like incredible shit. It's like buying shorts before you go and burn down the company. it's like pretty brutal.
Yeah. So they went in and they their thing was to get rid of Maduro was the idea to establish a coup. But them dumbasses and all their military get up decided to get caught by some fishermen.
Even before this, of course, it's a military operation. So it involves like months of training and resources. Training planning. Even though the person training them said, well, what the fuck? These guys aren't ready to go. They're not ready to be trained. It's like your coach is like, no, he's not going to run that 5K. He's completely useless.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not to get off track, but this is the same thing that Margaret Thatcher's son tried to do in Equatorial Guinea. He got caught in the DRC with a plane with a bunch of weapons on there, but he was going to fly to the Equatorial Guinea and try to take it over. And he got that idea from me.
Heard it here first, folks.
Silvercorp USA tweeted about the mission on May 3rd, the day the boats were intercepted by Venezuelan authorities.
didn't the guy tweet it to Trump?
Yes.
Idiot.
He said, hey, this is going on or some shit. And he tweeted that at Trump, saying that the operation is going on.
Jesus.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm glad it didn't. I'm glad it didn't work. I do not want the Venezuelan government to be overthrown.
I think that's the angle we kind of left out here. It's just that America is straight too stupid to coup. Like we were just like lost the coup power in the past 40 years or so, and we just like can't do it.
Yeah, the American military is not like it seems scary, but even the Iraq War is like. Didn't really do shit, you know? And even like situations like this, it's like, I don't know if they're just like racist. They think everybody like south of here or east of here is dumb, but like, it's just not going to go down.
Well,
like,
yes, they do. Absolutely. Yeah,
like, it's just not going to go down like that. And it's easy for people to think like, it's a dictatorship. Nobody's going to support. It's like, no, dude, like they tried to get Hugo Chavez out of there. Like literally the key worked for a day. Like, literally, the military dudes arrested him, and they were like, Whitey's not going to pay us, dude. Go back. Like they're lying, dude. Who goes probably in the cuffs? Like, do you think Whitey's? You think George Bush is gonna actually pay you, man? They're not gonna pay you, dude. Let me go.
Look at Gaddafi.
So yeah, I mean, I like the U.S. foreign policy for any like adversarial to somewhat adversarial nation is to sow chaos. And that's what the American foreign policy has done forever, and that's what it does in a bipartisan way. And that's what I pray for is like stability for these nations. Like, I know that none of those countries are perfect, but I don't look at them through a lens of perfection. I look at them through the lens of the United States. The United States ain't perfect either. Mm-hmm. Like.
They're a sovereign country. This is what should change in a sovereign country, but we should enforce that change upon them because does is fuck shit up.
We should also remember the history behind all these, and it's not like all these countries just like managed to be like where they were. It's the effects of not just the United States, but a lot of foreign policy blunders that I think need to be
Look at a lot of it is still undoings from the Cold Wars, the Cold War too.
Yeah, we got to do a whole episode on the new Cold War between the United States and China, because that's going to be...
the new Silk Road, baby. Oil pipeline.
Can we do that? Can we do that?
No, I would love to do an episode where we talk about...
Because that's going to take like an hour and a half.
Yeah, like it's not
even a long time.
No, we do actual research. We go about like how the new Silk Road is, One Belt, One Road initiative. We do all that stuff.
Very down.
Yes, let's do it.
I don't know. Caesar, what are your last thoughts? What are your last words? I want to give you something to do.
No, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know interjecting that, but just basically, like, I mean, Venezuela, like, it can't be more true than just knowing that. I think that people in America just – I don't want to generalize, but I mean, it just feels like I don't think they really have a good understanding of what's kind of going on the other side of the world. I don't think really respect what other people are going. You know, like South America, like some of those countries do have legit armies, they have legit air force, like they have legit setup, and it's like it isn't just a video game, man. Like it's not that cute, and just because, and I think that
like, I know
it's good to like try to like I know America's like. The lens is like, oh, like there's a dictatorship there. Oh, they're not democratic or they don't have a democracy. Like, we need to go in there and change that. But I think it's just really funny that how it's going on now. How can you pitch how America's going and be like, hey, don't you want what we have going on? Like, not really, dude. If I'm looking at my dictator and I'm still able to work and eat food, I'm like, I'm kind of okay, man. Like, you guys kind of have your own issue too. It's not like your system's perfect. The world we all have different cultures, we have different backgrounds, different things work in different countries for different people. Like, we didn't have the same setup. Like, so if you're trying to like influence your government, your style into an area that has a completely different setup, completely different socioeconomic status, it just can't be like that. And I don't think America has any divine right to spread or coup or poison leaders or do whatever the hell they want to influence and change that. So I think that if the Venezuelan people want to make a change, they can. If it fails, they can try again. It's on them. It's incumbent on them to make their own decisions as people on who they want as their leader and rise through. If you handicap, babysit, or do whatever, you're going to influence change there in the wrong or right way, and you don't know until hindsight. Hindsight, look back, go, maybe we shouldn't have done that because we didn't know the right way. So let them handle it, and if there's a different type of situation where they're asking for help, we can work together towards maybe helping the unions or the leaderships in South America to go put better influence and help each other out. There's a different process rather than America goofing off with sending some dudes in ski masks and guns on a damn what they call Duffy boats or whatever, just riding down the coast.
At least they have masks,
huh?
At least that PPE.
Like, it's just ridiculous.
All right. That's around the time to end it. Thank you all for joining us to this point. I don't know if anyone would get to this point, but we did it. We're here.
We did it. We did a podcast.
We Did It podcast. Check out We Made a Podcast on all social media, many social media platforms. We Made a Podcast.
Create us on Twitter, please. We want to go back to tweeting.
I know. I wanted to tweet you guys. I was watching Bundesliga all the morning. I was like, oh, wait, I can't tweet them anymore.
Please. Games are going to start soon. Can we have our Twitter back, please, Twitter?
Right?
Wait, seriously, what happened to your Twitter?
Twitter's mad.
Caesar was sending death threats.
That's literally not what happened. Twitter is arguing that we're not 3 years old and we're contesting otherwise. We are definitely not 18 years old, so.
Twitter is definitely not going to give you whatever you want. That's what I've learned from them. That's what you can always rely on. So let's do this again sometime. Let's do this again another time. I think these are fun.
Weekly.
Bam can lead the charge in our Patreon content. That'll be great.
Bam.onlyfans.com.
Lord.
No. Whoa. Political report OnlyFans.
Yeah, there we go.
That is literally the most boring OnlyFans you've ever described. That'll never. You have that face, but.
You say that now. Wait till we get a super chat going.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, no.
I do not want to see what Caesar does for $100.
Oh, God.
You would. I mean, they can only find out on politicalreportonlyfans.com.
Please do not try to go to politicalreport.onlyfans.com at all. I absolutely cannot. It's like when you were at school and it says, "Warning: our firewalls detected that you might encounter adult material on this website."
Access.
And that's why you go to that website where they block the page and you can type in whatever you want. That's how you got your MySpace back then.
TikTok tips with Caesar. Okay. Thank you all for joining. We'll talk next time. Peace.
Bye.
The first line defense fisherman was like, "Not today, Chief. You ain't getting past. I'm the first boss. I'm the first boss. Not today."